Welcome to the May meeting of the Harbor Advisory Board, and we'll dispense with the roll call and just show that all members are present. First item of business then is the approval of the minutes from last month. Are there any additions or corrections? We have the first action item is the abandoned vessel report, and Rick, would you like to, or Sue?
Okay.
There you go.
This item is coming before you. The City Council has discussed this, and they're requesting that the Harbor Advisory Board review this before they discuss it, and they're looking for some kind of recommendations regarding abandoned vessels, both within the city limits and outside the city limits. So I thought I'd give you a little bit of a background on how we generally handle things and some of the time and money and effort we've spent on things on an annual basis. We do try to be proactive in dealing with abandoned vessels. There are lots of issues with even designating boats as abandoned. There's legal issues, and of course there's financial issues, and there's always environmental issues to be considered when you're dealing with these boats and how to dispose of them. And it takes time to go through all these processes. So sometimes even though you have things that you know are problems, it may take up to a year before you can actually start physically doing something. I would say over the past 10 years, we have probably removed and disposed of about 3 to 6 vessels per year on average. Some years we've done more, some years we've done less. Part of that is just the way the timing works out and being able to start work on the process. Those are usually the bigger boats, boats that are in some way registered, and you go through either a lien sale process or an abandoned vessel process. Over the past 2 years, we've spent about $13,000 on disposing of vessels. This does not include direct staff time. This includes time for contract labor, which we've used on occasion, for dumpsters, for dealing with hazardous waste issues, and just removal. So it can be a very costly process, and it does take a lot of staff time as well. The other issue, besides the bigger vessels, are smaller skiffs and dinghies and rowboats, which you'd be surprised at the number that just turn up floating around, especially after a winter like this where we've had really high tides. There's that area back in Los Osos called Cuesta by the Sea, the little inlet there. There are a lot of things people store there, and sometimes when we have the storms or extraordinarily high tides, things manage to find their way up in our area of the bay, and we take them, and the process with those things included not only vessels, but all kinds of what you would call flotsam. We get everything from oars and seats and you name it, we get it. And pieces of electronics, and even just things like shopping carts. Whatever winds up, you know, we manage to get it. We hold on to things for about a year, and every year we try to have a sale of just property that winds up being not claimed. And people find creative uses for all these things. So that's a good thing. You wind up recycling them, and that's great. Now we get to the area in the Back Bay. This has been an issue ongoing since at least 1987. Technically, as you know, that Back Bay area is not in the city's jurisdiction. We do respond to that area on emergency issues. If a boat is breaking loose and it's going to be hitting other vessels or causing a threat for pollution, or if a boat sinks back there, we will and do respond and take care of those things. But that area is technically under the jurisdiction of Fish and Game through a lease they have with the State Lands Commission. And I would say since 1987, Rick and I, along with people from NEP, State Parks, Fish and Game, and lots of other interested parties, have been at several meetings trying to resolve these issues. To date, obviously, not much has been done. One of the things, the city, along with the NEP, has offered to assist Fish and Game in dealing with the vessels back there, in dealing with both the paperwork aspect and even just providing some in-kind services. So far, there has not been any official movement on the side of Fish and Game, and it is their responsibility to take the lead in this, as it is their jurisdiction. One of the things that the city could do is formalize their concerns in writing to Fish and Game and indicate that this is becoming more of a problem and it is should be a priority issue for them to look at and, again, offer our assistance. As a sideline, I was at the NEP Implementation Committee meeting today, and the NEP is going to be discussing this issue at their executive committee meeting as well because they are concerned as well about the Back Bay issues. It seems for a while the numbers back there had gone down, and now they're back up again. So there is it's coming to the forefront again, and that is one of their concerns, and they may also start a campaign of letter writing and trying to convince Fish and Game that it's something that needs to be addressed and have been left there. We are right now taking action on four of them that are bigger boats with engines that are CF-numbered boats that we can actually trace ownership, and we're sending letters out on those. All the other ones, it can be a real conundrum because those boats are not required to be registered, so it's much harder to trace ownership and therefore much harder to deal with. There are several things you could do. We could maybe patrol it on a quarterly basis or monthly and try to just have more of a presence there, and boats that are either broken up or totally trashed or really in bad shape, we can periodically take them into storage, and if they're not claimed within a year, we can treat it as abandoned property. So there are things we could do. We could try to regulate it and charge people, but again, because those are not easily identifiable, that could be a difficult thing to deal with administratively. So we would like to know what your recommendations would be on these issues that we can forward to council for them to consider. And if you have any questions.
I'll take questions for Sue first, and then I'm going to open it up to the audience if they want to make any later.
Same.
Questions?
Have you been in contact since the lease, Fish and Game leases, with the Lands Commission? And for all intents and purposes, they're in violation of that lease right now. Have you been in contact with the Lands Commission and asked them, as a leasor, to more or less, not necessarily, I hate to use the word pressure, but to ask them to stay in, you know, it's within the terms of their lease. Is that an avenue you guys have looked into?
We specifically have not, but they have actually been at one of the meetings. They were actually present via a telephone line, kind of a conference line. So they are aware of the problem, and I think part of the reason the council is looking at this and that the executive committee of the NEP is looking at it is the possibility of writing letters not only to Fish and Game but to State Lands Commission to bring this issue to the fore. So, but we haven't formally addressed them about that issue.
Okay.
So I might make a comment on that too, is that you know, that the State Lands Commission is well aware of the situation that's been drawn. Is the mic on? The light is on. Is it not? Is it working now? Okay. The State Lands Commission is aware of the situation here, and it's true that the situation with the Fish and Game would be technically in violation of the lease. You know, the options are the difficult part. What can you do? Obviously, it would be nice to have a solution better than, say, terminating the lease and back to where we were before they agreed to take over management, which was simply county waters. County doesn't have the resources to do anything in terms of management. So we'd be better. That is certainly a part of the comments we could make to the city council, and we may be heading very, it would be my guess, we may be heading to writing a letter to Fish and Game or State Lands Commission or
copy them both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and ask them to take certain steps, and that could certainly be one of them, but we would also be, you know, should keep in mind that we better be careful what we ask for.
Yeah. All right, I'll open this up to, do you have a question?
Yes. In our heading here in the subject, it talks about abandoned vessels, and in discussing the Back Bay issue there, are we grouping abandoned vessels with moored vessels?
some of the vessels back there that are moored vessels appear to be abandoned in the sense that they're in very deteriorated condition, and from what we can tell, people have not been on them for long periods of time. So in that regard, yes, they are being looked at that same light. And that is one of the issues that would have to be determined in managing that area. You would have to have the time and take the effort to go through there, identify the boats as much as you could through CF and documentation numbers, find out who the owners were, try to contact them, etc. But from what we have been able to tell just by observation, almost half of them appear to be abandoned.
Okay.
Now I'll open it up for the audience. Anyone like to make any comments? In that case, I'll bring it back to the board, and I'll start with you, Ed.
Well, my position is that the city should write a letter to the Fish and Game explaining the situation to them, and also that if, in fact, a boat breaks loose or sinks and the harbor department goes out, takes care of that vessel, brings it in and stores it.
Some effort made to identify the owners of those. I know you can't if they don't have documentation numbers, but maybe through some means such as the city police use for vehicles that are left on the street, they could be marked and a period of time could be allowed for any owner to respond, and after that period of time the boat ought to maybe be removed and stored until some owner comes forth. I also would think that once ownership is ascertained and if the city so decides to allow them to use that area for storage, then there ought to be more regulation to that storage so that the harbor department does know whose boats those are and that sort of thing.
Thank you, Jim.
I know, Rick, we, in the past, have had discussions with the county. The sheriff's department doesn't do any law enforcement on the water, even though that's their jurisdiction. It's unfortunate in that there are things like animal control. Cities don't often have their own departments, so they contract with the county. They pay for the service that another agency provides for them, with it, even though it's not their jurisdiction. And it's unfortunate that there isn't an opportunity to have the Harbor Department compensated for work they do literally for other agencies. However, historically, because emotionally the bay is ours, even the parts outside the city limit, we're emotionally invested in them, even if they're truly not our jurisdiction. And when things float across the line, we're affected no matter where they are in regards to that imaginary line. The city has provided services for free, basically, mm-hmm. to other jurisdictions. I really encourage you, and I know your dilemma there with pushing Fish and Game away, because the county is not in a position to do, they're in a position to do probably even less than Fish and Game, realistically. If getting NEP involved, if getting other agencies involved, NEP might be able to come up with some federal grant monies that would help protect the estuary from the damage that those derelict vessels can do, particularly the larger ones with engines and potential for a lot of damage. It's a dilemma. I think that anything that can be done to encourage participation from other agencies, whether it's to help secure grant monies from federal funds that NEP might have access to, anything that can be done to take the weight off of the city's department, the Harbor Department, should be encouraged. But I think we want to be cautious too, in that if we push Fish and Game away, are we sure we want to live with what the result is going to be? I think we want to look carefully at that, because the history shows that if they weren't there, there'd probably be even less participation from other agencies. So that would be my caution, but anything that can be done, please. please move that direction.
Can I make a quick comment, too, because I think if Pat Hedges is sitting at home watching, we should probably clarify that they do still have law enforcement responsibility for the bay. As Roger said, though, very limited capability. We all know with the Coast Patrol Office in Los Osos, covering Cambria to down to Shell Beach, I think, and without the boats in the Coast Patrol Office, obviously, they limited ability to respond. They have done a great job putting together a search and rescue team that's capable of putting a boat in the water, and they do respond for emergencies and do law enforcement on the water to the extent possible, I believe, in the Los Osos area.
I had one comment about that, too, just as way of background. In, I think it was either 1985 or 1986, originally the county was the responsible agency for that area, and they specifically went to State Lands Commission and said, we do not want this responsibility. And that is when that evolved into Fish and Game and State Parks taking over that whole area in terms of jurisdiction. So I think Rick's right. While they will respond to certain emergencies with the limited resources they have in terms of those boats, they have made it very clear that that's not their responsibility any longer. So
and I'm right there with Susan, because we both remember sitting in a meeting that came out of the old Morro Bay Task Force that involved the county folks and State Lands Commission.
The boats in the Windy Cove area, historically there have been boats anchored there since the early 1900s. And I've been involved off and on through with Fish and Game and NEP for a number of years trying to determine what to do there. I advocate they need to put in some kind of mooring system there and have it regulated just like any one of the other moorings, and contract with the city and maybe a private concessionaire or something like that. That, to me, would be probably the most advantageous situation right there. And then as far as the skiffs down on the Bayshore Bluff area, privately, several of the boat owners in the A2 area, which is immediately adjacent of the Bayshore Bluff area, have in the last 2 or 3 months removed over a dozen derelict boats there. And I applaud them for cleaning up not their messes, but other people's mess there, and doing all the work by themselves at no cost to anybody else. And I know that it's getting cleaned up. It's time for them to clean up their act, and they are doing that. So I don't think that's going to become a big issue. I think that with an increasing awareness from the Harbor Department, it will take care of itself. I'm more concerned about the deteriorated bluff than I am about the skiffs. Several of the trees have fallen over. There has been several spills from the erosion, and they've fanned out debris and material out into the bay there. And that's more concerning to me than anything else. That's my comment.
What can you tell me about how joint powers agreements work as far as on other JPA agreements we have, like with law enforcement? When we need assistance and other officers either cover for us or assist us, do we reimburse the agency that comes, or is it just a mutual aid situation?
The way I understand it, and I may not be 100% right on this, but I think that the agencies that we have written agreements with locally, we do not charge each other. The agreement is that we will provide backup. Now, there are times that we respond out of the area to other jurisdictions, and sometimes some of those costs are reimbursed through different processes, sometimes through FEMA, sometimes through other issues. But within the local jurisdiction, my understanding is that the agreement provides that certain levels of backup will be provided both ways. And also as a way of background, back in 85, 86, that was one of the things we were trying to do as the city was work out a JPA type of agreement with the county on that area. And they just felt that they did not have the resources, either in personnel or equipment, to deal with water issues. And that was why they did not feel it would be something they could enter into.
Okay, because I was wondering whether that was would be a way that we would, you know, well, possibly take care of the Back Bay is if we do the work because we have the physical ability to, but we get reimbursed for those services. Go ahead.
Susan gave a great description. I mean, typically those things are called mutual aid type, mutual aid agreements, and you know, you might be thinking of something that we've kicked around a number of times too, some kind of agreement where, say, the city might agree to manage the area if a mooring area was set up, or it can take any form. You know, I mean, these kind of things can take almost any form. It doesn't seem like this is a typical mutual aid type aid agreement situation.
Yeah, I agree, because there would be no, they wouldn't be assisting us. They would just be reimbursing us.
Right. And we did have some discussions at some of these meetings that we have had with the NEP and these other agencies about working out some kind of formalized agreement whereby we would help them with certain areas of the regulation and they would handle certain other areas that they would be more equipped to handle. So far, nothing has really come of that. From what I can gather from talking to the local fish and game people, part of it is a money and budgetary issue, and part of it is an issue of this has not risen to that level of priority. So again, maybe the idea of bringing this to the forefront by writing some formal letters and copying state lands and the NEP getting involved, I think will also help.
And in fairness, I would add to that that part of the problem has been a little bit on our side. At least on my side, we're leery of extending our area of responsibility into that area and taking on costs. We know what it takes to resolve abandoned vessel issues in terms of legal assistance, sometimes time, effort, and so we certainly don't want to step into that and assume a whole huge area of costs and work that, you know, on top of what we're trying to do now, an area that's outside city's jurisdiction. So we've been waiting for them to, you know, dedicate some serious resources on their side before we're willing to step in with some expertise and some help that we can provide. Is that fair?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. On the Bayshore Bluffs area, I like the concept of a casual atmosphere where, you know, the small dinghies and boats are able to just pull up and have a place to store their small vessel. I wouldn't want it to be larger ones, like you say, with motors, or those that have the CF numbers. But
they're more aware of our presence in terms of that we are looking at it and that we will periodically go through and remove things that look to be totally falling apart. We keep them for a while. Usually what happens, for example, behind the docks, we allow people who have moorings to tie up their dinghies, and they're supposed to have their mooring number on it so that we can tell at a glance that the boat can be there. Every now and then, all of a sudden, we see lots of little things showing up, and we will, a couple times a year, go through and remove those ones that do not have clear markings, and lo and behold, people come up and say, "What happened to my dinghy?" So that is an effective way of determining ownership, and if people don't show up within a year, you know, you can treat it as abandoned property. So I do think that could be an effective way of dealing with that area.
Do you put a warning on it before you remove it? So that
we usually try to put one written notice down at the floats and say, you know, please remove these or mark them appropriately. It would be a little harder in that area because one of the things we discussed in the office was we would be afraid of papers getting in the bay and how would you make sure they stay on the boats and that kind of thing. So.
Okay.
As far as the skiffs and small boats on Shell Beach, this is possibly one way that you could deal with it is if you were to actually post that area, and it would be, at least from low maintenance, low management, post the area, let everybody know that they have a given amount of time to check in with you guys to get some sort of, you know, you could get a plastic sticker. We used to get them all the time. Something that they could actually mark the boat that it was, they had checked in with you, that it was not abandoned, that it was legal. It would be their responsibility to check with you to get the sticker. And then those boats that aren't stickered within that given amount of posted time, you take away as abandoned vessels. And then if they come and they claim them, they can put the sticker on and go through the process. Just gets checked every once in a while, and then it puts the responsibility on the boat owners, and it's a minimal amount of effort on your part. That could be a way that could be dealt with. And, you know, probably just two posts, one on the north side, one on the south side. Oops, sorry. We could, you know, do that for you. boy, as far as Windy Cove, you know, I agree with Ed to a large degree that, you know, I have heard about some of the efforts with NEP, with the city, with Fish and Game, with state parks. And it's pretty obvious that Fish and Game has been somewhat remiss in taking up their responsibility on this. And so as the city, you know, takes responsibility and removes these derelict boats as they come loose, et cetera, I do feel that until you guys have come to an agreement or Fish and Game takes their responsibility, that you should be billing them. It's only fair. You guys are putting out the time and effort. But one of the things that in that short term, but long term, have you guys ever even talked about, because right now you guys have an outlay of time and money, and I noticed on the lease, the Fish and Game lease for that area, that the Lands Commission has the opportunity or has the ability to be able to sublease certain portions if they think that it's appropriate within that lease area. And if you took Gene's idea of actually turning that area into a legal mooring area, dropping the moorings, charging the rents for those, and then that would subsidize the amount of effort and time it takes to clean up the area. Is that even something that is possible, that you could take over a portion of that lease, make the money on the legal moorings, clean up the area with some of that income that's coming in, and manage it and make it a viable part of it? It's not something that could be done?
You could do it in terms of making enough money to even barely scratch the surface of taking care of the problem. No. The mooring, the rates we get on moorings are fairly minimal. It's about, it's going to go up to maybe $64 a month. It would not begin to cover costs even administratively to set up the mooring field even. So we have discussed the potential of partnering in some type of mooring area, and I know if Gene can correct me about this, at one point I think Fish and Game actually put out proposals or was looking into even hiring private operators to set up a legal mooring area back there. That effort, as far as I know, also kind of disappeared. And again, we would certainly, I think that is not a bad idea, and we would be willing to assist with that in terms of that being a method of helping to defray costs. It wouldn't, unfortunately, be enough to really...
Because I'm looking at the Back Bay first, and then I want to look at the Bayshore. I think that we can consider a number of motions for the Back Bay portion. One is to write a letter and cooperate with either the NEP and write it to Fish and Game, or write it to State Lands. I don't think you want to go into State Lands Commission, because you really don't want them to take it back from Fish and Game. I'm not sure if Fish and Game really wants it to start with. And if you took it back, then there's another vacuum. The county doesn't want it, and I don't think we really want it. What we probably would be nice is if they would all go away, but I don't think that's going to happen. So I think the status quo right now is about all we can do. But we can look at this concept of trying to get grant monies and that sort of thing to try to help out and try to pay for some of this cleanup, and possibly even, you know, I don't think we can actually say, let's get them out of there unless you're going to destroy them all, because we don't have any room in the rest of the area to put these guys. And you start saying, hey, throw them all out, and they've got to go somewhere. And for each one that we, let's see, we said $13,000 a year, and we do 3 to 6 units a year, and there's a bunch of boats back there that we're going to have to put $13,000 a year times about 5 or 6 just to take care of that. So I'm a little concerned about that. Let's look for grant money. Let's look for, you know, cooperation with the Fish and Game. Let's look for cooperation with the NEP. But, and maybe even look at the possibility of a new mooring field. But let's not kill this golden goose, or actually it'll turn into something worse. Regarding the Bayshore, you know, I can't help but say that I sail back there all the time. And it's, you know, okay, there's some back there that are really ugly. But on the other hand, it's, you know, it's the harbor. And it's not too awful bad. And if they are cleaning up their own act, I don't think we don't need any more regulations, as Rick said. I don't think we need stickers for them, because then you guys would have to go get the stickers, make sure they were on there, and then the guys that didn't care anyhow, they aren't going to put any stickers on. And you'd have to go in and look all this time. And then when you find one that doesn't have a sticker, like the Tidelands Park Pier, you know, you take it and you put it in your yard, and the guy comes back and says, where's my dinghy? Okay, so I'm saying it ain't broke yet, so let's not do too much in the way of fixing it. I do see from Gene's observation, and I hadn't noticed it myself, but that the bank, it may become destabilized, and maybe we do need to take a look at that, but I think that's a separate issue, and maybe we need to agendize that at some later date if you... and not immediately, because I think we need to take a look at this in a little bit more depth, and I would ask the board members on your own hook to take a look at it, check it out, see what's going on. The self-help down there, the self-discipline that Gene has observed, I think that's great, and I think that leads us to say, you know, it ain't broke, so let's not fix it. So at this point, I'm finished with mine, except that I'd like to see, I will entertain a motion that would state that we either write a letter in conjunction, ask the city council to write a letter in conjunction with the NEP, not a threatening letter to Fish and Game, but a cooperative letter to Fish and Game. I would consider a motion for that.
Would you consider any other kind of motion?
I can consider any kind of motion.
Then why don't you just consider one kind of motion?
Well, because I wanted to get that one first.
I'll make a motion for you.
Okay.
I'll make a motion that we advise the city council in the city of Morro Bay to write the state Fish and Game a letter stating our concerns, that we advise the National Osprey Program of our concerns and ask them if there is grant money possible to handle this, and also bill the Fish and Game for a time. They may not ever pay the bills, but they need to know the cost, and they need to have those costs on an upfront basis, and that's my motion.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, we have a motion, we have a second. We'll have discussion at this point. And we'll start with Mandy.
That sounds like a great idea. I don't know if letters have already been written to them, but... I'm in complete agreement with that.
Okay. As far as I know, there have been no formal letters. There's been lots of meetings, lots of discussions, lots of phone calls, but I do not think there have been any letters. It is
a motion and a second, and three things are billing,
right,
writing to the NEP, and writing to Fish and Game.
Okay, and we can't add a grant and asking for
he's already said that he wants to put a grant, a clause in for the NEP.
Okay, well, I was just asking if we could actually be real specific about that, but that's okay. We don't need to go there.
Mm-hmm. Rick?
I can probably go along with all of that. The billing of fish and game would be strictly based on abandoned vessels, right? Since that's the subject that we're talking about. Nothing, no other operations in the back bay. Okay.
I'd like some clarification here. As I understood it, you were just saying that everything that we do in Windy Cove in that area was billing fish and game. We bill fish and game. Is that correct?
Only for something in abandoned vessels for the cost.
Okay. Then that we're adding that to your motion. That's a friendly amendment. The second, accept that?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Just clarifying things.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Okay.
I have no more comments.
I'm supportive of it with the exception of the billing. I think that we would want to start off working for cooperation and then follow up, because if somebody who's way removed up in Sacramento that doesn't even know where Morro Bay is says, we've got an agreement with them, cancel it. We don't need this agreement, and then we're stuck. I think that working with the other agencies as much as we can might be more productive. Let's at least start off looking for cooperation, and if they get confrontational, then send them the bill. But to start that way.
Perfect. How many times have you talked with fish and game about those back ones back there, the problem with the manifest?
15 years, we've talked to them, you know, probably 10 to 20 times.
Excuse me, we don't just jump in. Let's make it so we do it in order. Are you finished?
I think that a formal contact from the city council is a little different than Rick picking up the phone. Oftentimes it's when the agencies in writing contact each other that people take note. The phone calls, I agree with you, don't always get the reaction.
Okay, having said that, do you want to make a motion to amend to remove the billing?
Well, I'm not sensing a lot of support in that direction. If there are other people feeling that.
Well, if you make the motion, you'll find out whether somebody will second it.
Well, I would then amend the motion to drop the billing portion.
I have a motion. Do I hear a second? I don't hear any. Jim?
I would just wonder about the billing part of it as well, whether you're talking about billing for the actual cost of removal of an abandoned vessel or a hypothetical abandoned vessel, or whether you're talking about hypothetical costs involved.
Actual costs.
Okay.
May I just further ask about how that is then? You're going to take a specific example of a vessel that's been abandoned and removed and send them a bill for that? Or
when they, well, I would do it. If you're going to ask a question, I'll have to see what I'm thinking.
Mike.
If they have a boat that they have to go recover that's sunk or that's been abandoned, that costs the city money, and they go recover that boat, they go put it in storage, chop it up, or whatever, they bill for the cost for that boat.
Okay. I'm still confused, I guess. Are you talking about a motion to have the city write a letter to Fish and Game requesting their cooperation with the problem and requesting their understanding of what the city's problem is in dealing with these vessels, and yet there's going to be attached to that letter requesting support a bill for the actual cost of removing a vessel?
That's correct.
Ed, do you have anything more to say?
No.
Okay. I'll bring it back to me, because I think it's premature to go billing Fish and Game at this point in time. I think that, I would like to see the letter be sent to NEP supporting them and...
The issue would be that City Council would write a letter to Fish and Game and correspond with the about the situation in the Back Bay, also copy or write another letter to the NEP and discuss potential grants, and instead of just saying billing Fish and Game for any sunken or abandoned vessels, stating that in the future we might have to consider charging them for the city's costs in dealing with any sunken or abandoned vessels in that area.
That's acceptable to me.
Is that correct?
Anyone like to comment on this? Go ahead, Rick.
Since we don't, I don't think what Ed had indicated first, that he would be encouraging the Harbor Department to go out and start working on the vessels in the back area. So I don't think that, you know, when the letters are sent, that there's going to be a bill attached. It would be, if there are any future emergencies where we have to address a vehicle that's looks like it's creating a hazard, at that time in the future we would start billing. So it could be several months between when we are working on the cooperation, but if the cooperation doesn't occur, then the department has the authority to go ahead and proceed with a billing rather than going through this whole exercise again.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Do you have anything?
I just want clarification. Rick, you're talking about with the amended motion?
Yeah, so I would not support the amended motion because it's saying no billing in the future. We would have to go through this whole process again for the department to do any billing if there is a vessel that they have to work on. I think that we should be starting off with the letters, working towards agreements, but 3-4 months from now, if they have to address a vessel out there and nothing has happened on the communication level, I think they should be allowed to process a bill and send it off.
Okay.
You know, I would agree with you, and my frustration at the situation is the same as everybody else's, but my experience is that small agencies who threaten big agencies don't carry a lot of weight, and the big agencies' attitude towards cooperation is often lessened by those threats, not encouraged. So,
okay. Well, if there, do you have anything that is okay on the amendment?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I don't think that Ed was talking about having any implied threats in that letter. They were threats of going in the direction towards cooperation, but in the future, if something were to break loose, if we had to take care of something, that we incurred costs, that we would just go ahead and bill, that we're not going to threaten to bill. We just do it if it's necessary in the future. So I think the original amendment was more than appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Understanding that we don't make these decisions, it will be the City Council. We're asking the City Council to do something. We are not telling the Harbor Director to do something. Okay. Based on that, the first order of business at this point is to vote on the amendment. All in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. We have 3. All opposed?
Aye. No.
We have 4 opposed. The amendment fails. Now we go to the original motion with the billing request in there. And all in
Can
favor?
Can I ask a question just to make sure I have it correct? On the initial one, the section about the billing Fish and Game for any costs associated with future sunken or abandoned vessels, is that something you would want included in the letter to Fish and Game? Okay.
That you would bill them in the
right.
future.
And I guess I'd like to clarify, maybe with Susan listening, I thought that the context of that I was getting wasn't any future costs anymore. It was more direct physical costs for remediating sunken boats. those kind of costs.
That's what I said.
Well, okay.
Any costs related to future sunken and abandoned vessels in that area.
Okay, because I wanted to be clear on that too, because it's going to be, I'm trying to get a handle too on how I think we can relay this clearly to council, how if they choose to go with that, how that might actually work is something this would be new to me too, so that would seem to be clear enough.
Okay, we're all understand the motion. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
Some kind of mooring area. How that would be, we would have to obviously put effort into clearing out vessels that were abandoned or simply not tended or had no intention of coming to compliance with standard mooring procedures and paying rent. But some folks would stay. And the problem in all of that is, Gene would probably think too, because I think he did look at the mooring proposal. In my opinion, one of the big problems is that you don't have shoreside support in that area easily accessible. There's no parking at Windy Cove, essentially, nothing but a dirt area. So strategically, in my mind, we did reach out a lot, as you all know, to take on the State Park Marina. And I've had some moments in the last month when I wondered why, but one of the reasons why, also, not just because of the importance of that boating facility and because we foresaw nothing, eventually closing, but that could also be the shoreside support to this mooring area. I thought about either the old marina in Amora Bay would be another potential place where you might get some parking and a pump out, but the marina is the best place. So I have it in my mind, too, that if we can solve the marina problem, big if, but if we can solve the marina problem, it makes it an easier issue, I think, maybe to deal with the back bay mooring.
I agree to try to deal with it.
Okay. I think we have taken care of the back bay portion of this action item. Are there any motions for any action on the Bayshore side? Hearing none, we move on to the next action item, fishing issues. Rick or Sue?
This one I think you give me. Thank you, Susan. Just a moment. We're requesting that you make a recommendation to the City Council that they send off two letters on fishing issues. The first one is a request for a declaration of disaster in the salmon fishery. We have provided a staff report. I'll do a quick one, but the information's here. On the salmon issue, because of very low recruitments in the 2002 year due to water diversions or I guess most accurately you could say due to low water. The Klamath salmon is projected to have very low returns. And the Endangered Species Act does protect the Klamath Run Chinook. Therefore, the Pacific Fisheries Management Council was required to take every step possible to basically eliminate any take of Klamath salmon this year. So when they had to set the salmon seasons, they had to look at that. And the way they set the salmon season was to shift almost all the effort, certainly in the early in the season, all the effort is down south. For example, right now, commercial salmon season opened up on May 1. But it opened up from Pigeon Point South, which is south of Half Moon Bay, on June 1st, I believe, until July 3rd, I believe. So the whole month of June and a little bit after, the whole effort is south of Point Sur, further south yet. Now, June is the month when, historically, salmon fishermen have their highest catches. So the whole effort has now been shifted south of Point Sur in the months when they traditionally get their most productive months. And as we all know, it's salmon.
Right now we have good salmon catch up here. That's great. I've got the best fishing in the whole coast. It's apparently right here. Last night we talked, I know we said about 10%. But that may last and it may work out fine, but that is a real risk because traditionally the bulk of land is all north of Point Sur. And Monterey Bay and traditions get salmon down to the end. So this is a real, real risk for salmon fishing this year. It may work out, but it's going to be very difficult. So DCFFA specific to the Fish and Fisheries Association, that prepared a lot of paperwork and a lot of work background.
So, in your packet, you've seen not only are we sending a letter requesting a declaration of disaster, but also a 9-point plan for how the salmon fishery can be improved.
Fish is not has not been totally zeroed out. When the fish get in river, there will be a tribal catch. That tribal catch is not regulated by the Pacific Fishery Management Council. The only catch that is regulated by the Pacific Fishery Management Council is sport in river, sport ocean, and commercial ocean. So once you factor in the number of fish that they figure will be taken by the tribes in river, then there is no catch allowable on the ocean. So what they've done is they have taken everywhere that any Klamath River tags have been taken. I have issues with the methodology, and I always have, but that's beside the point. The fact is that if they that as the Sacramento River fish, which is abundant this year, closes in on the Sacramento River, that's during the month of June. And so you have your best catches are in the month of June as these fish are funneling in from the north and the south and coming into that Gulf of the Farallon area from Point Reyes or Bodega Bay down. As what's happened now is that that area is totally precluded, so we'll have an over-escapement of Sacramento River run fish. And it will just be a question as to how much rain we get next winter as to whether the river system can even carry the escapement that we're going to have. We need to have the same conditions we had this year for that not to project another escapement disaster 4 years hence. Part of the nine-point plan is very important that it be put into the process of management. We have a very long process that we have to go through with the Pacific Fisheries Management Council.
I'm going to have to stop you because we're not taking up that particular letter at this point in time. We're talking about this first letter. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Oh, that is okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
This is not ground fish. This is salmon, right?
Okay.
Okay. That's about it. I had another point to make, and I've.
That's great, though. I've always wanted to cut you off, so.
Y'all, I'll do that.
Fred?
Yes.
There's a question for you.
You can get your other point out. No, are you in support of this agreement right here?
I'm heavily in support of that 9-point agreement. I'm heavily in support of the Harbor Advisory Board recommending that the council get behind this. I think that it would be a good message to send. It'll put the wave out there. It may not be a total success, but it'll put some energy out there that'll move the right way. I wanted to say something. I know what I wanted to say is we have this little salmon season that's below sur, but it's a salmon season that below sur is good for under 100 boats. When you take 500 boats, the entire salmon fleet, and push it down into this area, there are not enough fish for the entire fleet. What they've done is they have not made the fish available so that statistically you can sit and see where when they cut those areas down, you can say, okay, you X amount of fishermen can catch X amount of fish below Point Sur, but if you take all of the fish that will be caught this year and divide it by the number of boats, you will have a disaster. My daughter's fishing on the line at Año Nuevo and with all of the Fort Bragg and Eureka guys. I asked her if she'd seen anybody else, and she said she hadn't even seen a Moss Landing boat because they're afraid they don't want to go up to the line and encounter the Eureka and Fort Bragg fleets. So there's been a tremendous amount of compression of effort into a very small area. Thank you.
Okay.
Any?
We'll start with you, Ed.
Well, I don't need to say much. Fred's pretty knowledgeable. He's been a salmon fisherman for a long, long time. And this has happened before where we've declared the salmon season a disaster. Sometimes they give the fishermen some cheap loans. Sometimes they don't. But I would recommend that we advise the council to go ahead and sign this letter and ask to forward that nine-point plan. Mm-hmm. That's about all I have to say.
I would also agree to the letter and support of the plan, too.
You know, and I have to admit, I am not, this is one of the bowels of government that I'm not very familiar with. Fred, do you know what's been available? Can I ask for some help?
Sure, go ahead.
At one point, we had a very bad year where we were declared a disaster, and they made our federal unemployment insurance because we were employers. We'd been playing into a federal unemployment plan, and they gave us some back. I think, you know, personally, I think there's better uses for the money. I think making the funds available, whatever disaster funds they have, to press this nine-point plan, to push that nine-point plan, would be a better use of funds. That would be immensely helpful to the entire group of fishermen. And would be a non-personal act. And there's other things that have happened with the oil money, mitigation money, where there was safety equipment that was granted, so that the fishermen have to repack their life rafts every 2 years, or they get a Coast Guard citation, year or 2 years, and you eventually wear the raft out just repacking it. At like $1,000 a pop, and then you're off for another $3,000-$4,000 raft. So sometimes we've gotten safety equipment, e-perbs, life rafts, and other devices. And then there's also I mentioned my daughter; she's just got into a pool of where fishermen insure themselves, and they required that every person in that pool have a liability, an environmental liability insurance, so that if there was if they had an oil spill connected to their boat or any other disaster in harbor, that they would have an insurance company that would help them pick it up, which would offset the liability of the pool. And probably that is not a widespread insurance that's held at this time. But it might be a very, it might be nice if the state was providing a grant where if the fisherman made the payment, turned his receipt in, then he was reimbursed for that environmental insurance. And that would be a nice, it would be nice for the harbors, too, to make sure that they had that cleanup in place. So I think that between our traditional things that have happened in various funding forms, I think there's a good venue for asking for support that will promote the industry and promote the welfare of people not only associated with the industry, but our communities also.
Before you go away, can I make a comment maybe to try and answer that question too and see what you think about this? Is that, I'm not proposing that we have the time or energy or the capability even with once we send this letter off to get involved in how disaster assistance might be shaped. And I think there is some flexibility in how these things work out. Sometimes it's a legislative program. Other times it's simply worked out, I think, within the agencies that manage these funds. But I do have a lot of faith in PCFFA. Mm-hmm. I know that they will be totally involved in trying to follow up their letter. And they do have the time and energy. Well, they certainly have the energy, and they will dedicate time to working out a program. And so my feeling with this letter was basically we're returning over the details of the program probably to be worked out by in Sacramento with the assistance of PCFFA. Would
You can do that. Or you can take the lead and throw some stuff on the table and see how they want to take it. They might appreciate some creative thinking.
Well, and that answered my question. Thanks a lot, Fred. I really appreciate it. So these are my comments, given the information that Fred just gave me and all the information that you gave me. Thanks. I think the 9-point action plan is great, and it's really important that that be implemented. So I've taken a look at the letter, and I have a couple of issues with it. One of them is the fact that anytime you're asking for assistance, relief, mitigation funds, etc., and you're sending it to a government agency, not only do they want to know what you're mitigating, but they also want to know how you're going to be mitigating that. So that's the reason why I asked the question, is that if we could at least state in this letter that we are asking for this relief and for this statement, and that we would like mitigation funds to go towards that 9-point action plan, along with some other creative ways that are going to be helping, you know.
The Cheetah Work being a proofreader. That was pretty good.
Okay.
That's kind of important, too. Yeah.
Then on your letter, too.
Yeah.
The interior. I figured that was an easy one. Yeah.
Yeah, this letter did. Our deadlines for preparing the council packet was Monday. So this letter was ready, and we did include this letter in this format in the council's packet. If you would like to see some changes into it, what I would prefer that you would do would make a form of a recommendation, and then we'll pass those. We'll turn around tomorrow and prepare a memo, and I'll also include it in my report. But they will be looking, because they have the packet. It's already out. They will be looking at this letter.
Gene?
I support that.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Otherwise, I support everything in there.
I'm glad Fred came all the way up from Baja to talk on this issue, and I support it.
Guess I'm going to ask you, when were you in Baja? Because I was down there just last month myself.
Came along in March 7th.
All right. As I see, everybody is very supportive. Mandy is asking for more specific information in the letter as to what we that we are supportive of the 9-point plan. And I see here where it says the City of Morro Bay is also supportive of the 9-point action plan proposed by the et cetera, et cetera. And that's not sufficient?
No. Actually, what I was saying was, you know, yeah, the city is supportive of that, but what they would be asking for is in that they'd be asking for mitigation funds to go towards implementing that 9-point action plan, that actually that is what some of that money should go to, along with any other, you know, mitigation that the fishermen can come up with, but make it a little more specific.
It's my understanding, Rick, that this is that the 9-point plan is not coming from the City of Morro Bay, but from the Fishermen's Association. Is that correct?
The Pacific, not the local Fishermen's Association, the
yes.
Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Association.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, when they submit this, they're submitting this as well to the governor.
They have already sent a letter.
And they are asking for whatever they wanted to ask for. And we are just saying that we support that. Is that correct?
Yes, in this letter, that's it.
Okay. Does anyone else want to feel that that we should be more specific in here than we are?
Yeah, I don't have any problem if we can direct some of that funding towards the 9-point plan. I think that's a great idea.
Okay, we just say whatever funding that you come up with as far as mitigation, that you direct it toward the 9-point plan?
And any other creative solution.
Mm. All right, I'll accept that as a motion.
Can I try some? I know this is, but how about something like, maybe it's just so we can do this right, maybe we could recommend that the City of Morro Bay is supportive and suggest that the highest priority for funding should be the 9-point plan. Is that what I'm...
Okay.
So then we could just add that to the line, maybe suggest a clear correction to the council.
All right, then move that we'll have a motion that we accept the letter as modified.
So moved.
I have a motion and a second. I don't believe there's any more discussion, is there? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
I think I got it.
Carries. Now we go to the ground fish.
Oh, could you clarify for us who moved and seconded?
I moved second.
Thank you. Okay, the ground fish issue. We had a meeting last Friday on this, and that was one reason writing a letter was delayed. Yeah, the letter did not get into the packet. The proposed letter did not get in the packet for the council, but we did provide you a copy. I take that back. It did. I'm sorry. It was the other way around. We prepared your advisory board packet last Thursday before the meeting, so we didn't have the letter at that time to put in your packet. Subsequently, had the meeting on Friday. We wrote a draft letter that is in the council packet, and I have given you a copy tonight of the letter that's in the council packet. It's the one addressed, it's dated May 9th, and it addressed Mr. D. Robert Lawn. The background on this issue is that the 1996 reauthorization of the Magnuson-Stevens Act made it the Sustainable Fisheries Act and included a new concept called essential fish habitat. One of the things that came out of the 1996 reauthorization was that each fishery has to have a fisheries management plan and that there should be essential fish habitat designated within each fisheries management plan. And essential trawling in those areas, future trawling in those areas. So this is something that we learned about a couple months ago. It has been going on for a long time, like a lot of fishing issues, four or five major fishing issues out there at any one time, and we usually find out about them sort of when they get to a crisis and somebody starts saying, oh, my gosh, you got to look at this. Well, there is a very extensive document out there that is called the Draft Environmental Impact Statement for the Essential Fish Habitat Designation for the Ground Fish Management Plan. And that has a number of alternatives for designation of essential fish habitat and fishing gear and regulation changes that could protect those designations. Many of the alternatives would essentially end trawling in our area. And as we have stated in this staff report and in our letter, trawling is a controversial practice. I don't want to, we shouldn't kid people that over the, or we shouldn't try to disguise the fact, in my opinion, that in the 1970s, the Magnuson-Stevens Act actually subsidized and put into business many of the trawlers through low-interest loans and encouraged folks to not only get in the business, start operating trawlers, but also encouraged larger trawling activity and larger gear that was more destructive. And we went through a phase in this country where we increased the landings commensurately, but we also probably had a disastrous program in the long run for protecting the resource or at least sustainability. Since the mid-80s, there's been a drawback, and since about 1990, and I'm rough with my numbers here, but about 1990, there have been very much reduced quotas for ground fish folks and trawling effort especially. Many of the trawlers have been on virtually uneconomical quotas. They're usually on, it's been a moving target, but in recent years it's always been a 60-day quota. As we state in this letter, the 60-day quota can typically be caught in 5 to 8 days of fishing effort. And that's better, that's more quota than they had 6, 7, 8 years ago, substantially more, when many trawlers simply did not even operate. And so what we've got in the bigger picture here is that since 1990 we've had a reduction, a very significant reduction in the trawl effort. Many of the boats that have sunk or gone out of the business, the permit is not, it's a limited entry permit. Those permits are not replaced. There's been a federal buyback program to reduce the 240 permits approximately there were on the West Coast, and now about 170, about a third of the fleet, the permits for ground fish was bought back. With reduced closures, with reduced quotas and area closures, we now have 5 trawlers in our area that still harvest fish, and they harvest between 5 and 8 days out of 60. If you add all that up, most days there's really no trawler operating on our coast here. But that's still significant landings. The reason we became very concerned is because groundfish for our port is absolutely critical. Those are these consistent landings. Very much it's nice to follow the salmon discussion like this one with Fred's information, because typically most years we hardly have any salmon landing here at all, any substantial commercial salmon landings here at all. This year may be a little different. It's an anomaly probably if it lasts. We have crab fishermen, salmon fishermen, albacore fishermen who almost always land all their catch up north. So what this port was made on and what it sustains its infrastructure still was groundfish. That's one reason why we've seen such a severe reduction here in the 1990s, because we've had such a reduction in groundfish landings. It's actually been getting a little better with these buybacks and issues, and now we see the essential fish habitat designations. We need to correspond with this by this comment deadline of May 11th to the Pacific Fisheries Management Council again and tell them how important these landings that exist still retain here are to our city, to our harbor, and urge them to come up with reasonable alternatives. That there's lots of ocean out there, and much of it is hardly fished at all. And there certainly are very possible to come up with reasonable alternatives that can protect the important habitats and still allow trawling. So that's what we've tried to do with this letter. And maybe I can answer your questions. And I know there are some folks in the audience that are interested in this too. Might like the opportunity.
Okay. Well, first of all, let's. This is the first we've seen of this letter. This is the draft letter that you received. In any case, I'll ask if there's anyone in the audience that would like to speak to this subject. Please come up and state your name.
Good evening, everyone. My name's Gordon Fox. Some of you know me and some of you don't. I'll give you a little background. I've been a fisherman for over 30 years. I moved to this area about 7.5 years ago and began to fish spot prawns, and we did that for about 5 years. And that was good business for me, and I really began to enjoy this effort to improve my opportunities to sell fish in Morro Bay. I'm hoping to have a buyer begin to make deliveries and truck fish out of here to the San Francisco Bay Area, thereby improving the market opportunities that I would have as a groundfish fisherman in this area. Without going into a lot of history about groundfish deliveries in this town, I think it would be fair to say that they haven't been the most excellent available, and I think that's all I need to say. So since that time, we've made considerable progress. Been looking forward to being able to fish out of my hometown, and this development with the essential fish habitat situation is something that is taken what I consider to be a pretty good business plan, and it'll take a shoot it right between the eyes if we see a no trawl zone between Point Arguello and Monterey. Certainly not what I want to see. I think it would be a bad thing for me financially and also personally, because that means that I'll continue to have to travel back and forth from San Francisco to Morro Bay. It would be a very bad situation for the future of the commercial fisherman's dock, and I think our organization has done a good job of trying to grow that situation. I think there's good potential that it could work, and I'd like to be part of it. It's also a bad thing for the city, because it has its own funding problems right now, and anything that creates less opportunity for visitors to come and enjoy the seafood and fishing atmosphere of this town is certainly not going to be something that's helpful to this community. So I want to speak in support of the letter that Rick has written, and I want to impress upon the Harbor Board and also the City Council that I think you may be in a more difficult position than I am, because at least I can start my business and move it to a place where it'll work. You can't do that with your harbor.
Thank you. All right. Mandy, we'll start with you if you want.
I would prefer to be last on this issue. Thank you.
Oh, okay.
Can I do that?
Sure.
Thanks.
I'll start with Gene then.
Are you still open for public discussion?
Oh, I thought... I'm sorry. Yes, we are.
Hi, I'm Fred Sears. I moved here in 1970, and so I've seen a lot of the developments, the rises and falls of many of the fisheries in this area. The rockfish fishery was impacted by more than trawlers. It was impacted by gill netters. It was impacted by very heavily impacted in the 1980s by sonic testing at Point Arguello when they were trying to get their oil leases up to snuff. Each oil company would have its own sounding boat. So they'd run three, four sets of surveys, and these were acoustic surveys, and they were extremely powerful. They caused one of our divers, he had to get out of the water when one passed 2.5 miles away from him. He could not stay in the shallows where he was because one made a pass into him. Mark Tognazzini was on a survey monitoring that, and he could even though he was paid by the oil company, he made a statement which was independent of his relationship with them, that said that he felt that the sonic was impacting the spawn. So that was another factor that hit it. Then we've had X factor and X factor. The reality is that we're always fighting the last war or the last battle. So as we look at this trawl situation, we're looking at information, we're looking at stuff that's over 5 years old, and it's taking everyone a long time to catch up. And the proper surveys that have to be done to plot the future are not being done yet. So I would say that while it's extremely important for the sustenance of the commercial fishing community in Morro Bay to have a trawl fishery, it's also important to realize that the public perception and the information available is not right where we're at. And we're coming into a rebounding of fishery stocks. We're coming into a decreased effort. And I would hope that we would look to see what the future is going to look like instead of what the past has looked like. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. So
out there that the fish counts are slowly coming back. Yeah, there were problems, but it's very important to keep commercial fishing alive and well here in Morro Bay and up and down the coast. And there isn't. I've known a lot of commercial fishermen. There isn't one of them that wants to catch the last fish out there. They want their kids to be able to earn a living the same way, just like Fred's daughter. And they are very much more involved in wanting to ensure the future of fishing, as well as have an opportunity to fish today.
Jim?
I fish a little bit, but recreationally, and I do believe that in the case of recreational fishermen anyway, or the regulations of those, that the government agencies have a tendency to, first of all, overreact, and then because they overreact, they overregulate. And the consequence of that, of course, is increased closures. And based upon those feelings, I'm both in support of the letter and, of course, against the increased restrictions for the commercial fishermen.
Well, I've fished bottom fish here since 1968. Not the last couple of years, but all the years prior to that. Both gill net and hook and line fishing and dragging. And back in the 60s, we had maybe 5 draggers here. And then during the 80s, that number ballooned up to as many as 25 or 30. We had quite a few Dover boats. We had pink shrimp boats and prawn boats and more than I felt that was necessary here by far to keep us in good shape. But this letter really addresses fish habitat. The fish count right now, as far as I can see, is fine. The guys are going out and they're getting their limits of deep water, Dover sole, black cod, hardheads in short order. There's no problem there at all. And the smaller draggers that are fishing the English sole, Petrolli sole, and Rex sole, and other species in shallower water are doing better than they ever have, at least since back then, since the 60s. So there is, the fish are coming back as far as that's concerned, but as far as the habitat protection is concerned, there was some alternatives that were just drastic, and they were put out by some environmental outfits that were, as far as I'm concerned, were way overboard. So the fishermen had a meeting with the Nature Conservancy, who seemed to be pretty level-headed, and they started marking down a lot of areas that they thought could be protected. And they're in those meetings right now. I mean, as we speak, they're probably getting ready to communicate back and forth on that. And hopefully before the council makes a decision, that they'll come up with an agreement on those essential habitat areas where we can all live with it. And this letter, basically, that's all this letter is saying, is to support that process. And I would recommend that we go ahead and send it all.
Mm-hmm. Rick, I guess it's up to you.
Thanks a lot for the clarification, because I just got this letter, and nobody likes to admit that they don't know enough about an issue, but I would have to say I am still learning about this issue, and I've been going to as many meetings as possible. But having reviewed this letter, I do have a couple of questions. If that's okay, Rick, can I ask you a couple questions? You know, you have four bullet dots in this, and on the second one, it says implement EFH designation for groundfish that have no strings attached. Can you explain that to me, please?
Well, you know, we're trying to stay broad brush here, and there's incredible detail in each of these issues, each of these groundfish management plan gear types, and the concern many folks have is this particular issue right now is focused on groundfish and limitation on trawl effort, but it clearly could potentially, even out of this process, have impacts on other gear that might disturb the bottom, such as traps. And it's hard to tell. As in typical with this process, it's hard to tell where this stuff is going. And then many people in other fisheries have raised questions about, well, how is this, if an essential fish habitat area, large areas are going to be designated, probably large areas are going to be designated essential fish habitat off this coast out of this process. And how will those then be used for other gear types? And what we are trying to say here is that let's leave this to so that we can understand how this process and how it relates to trawlers, and then try to limit the future impacts. So at least the discussion, so it's not a foregone conclusion. Sometimes sued the Pacific Fisheries Management Council to force them to start making these EFH designations. And when that lawsuit did determine that the law said that they should be creating EFH designations, they met with Oceana and came up with an agreement that says they will complete the, I think the final deadline is June 2006. And they're on some staged timelines, and the next one is the PFMC meeting in Foster City next month. And that at that meeting, they're supposed to adopt their preferred alternative. So we got a month here before a major, major step of adopting the preferred alternative happens. So although frankly, I don't think the PFMC has much flexibility in extending these deadlines without the cooperation of Oceana. It at least is a good point to make, in my opinion, and to ask for more time if it were possible, because what a shame it would be if this collaborative process is going to ripen up where, it's a very interesting thing. It's more than the environmental groups, especially Nature Conservancy. It's very interesting in the information they're getting from the fishermen, because very little is known about habitats out in the ocean. As Ed well knows, nobody really has any good idea. They talk about deep water corals, but they don't know where any of this stuff is. Where most of the fishermen do, who have been doing it any period of time, they know they can very, very well point out many of these areas that these folks want to protect. And so there's a fair exchange going on. So the even the Nature Conservancy, for example, might want to extend the deadline. But and it would be a shame if these things couldn't be worked out collaborative. Whether that can be done in the time frame, I don't know.
Okay, one more question. And because I absolutely have no idea what this is. On the last bullet dot, it says by considering an ombudsman program. I have no idea what that is.
Well, we're just trying to say that these, as usual, this has been going on for 3 or 4 years, and I was unaware of it. Most of the fishing community here was unaware of it. Most of the trawlers barely knew anything about it, who were directly affected. And that's our fault, I guess. I guess it's your job to be aware of all these different initiatives and all the things that are going on. It's virtually impossible. So we're asking them to try to do a better job of helping us, especially because of the point in the last points in the letter, because we're an owner-operated fleet here. In the Puget Sound area, for example, there are large processing interests, large corporate ownership of vessels. They have lobbyists. They have folks. Even the fishing side has, much better tracking of these issues. And, of course, the environmental NGOs have a lot of power and influence and money and influence. But, we, a little city, and all our owner-operator fleet, it's incredibly difficult to stay up on these issues. They have associations, but so we're at least asking, couldn't you help us out a little bit with those kind of things?
Okay, thanks. You do have a draft of the EIS, at least that draft. Do you have that in the Harbor Advisory or the Harbor Office?
Well, we didn't. Did we put it in this?
Maybe. I have one.
Okay. And I can give you, we did include in the council packet a summary, an executive summary, which was pretty good information. Apparently, I didn't put it in this agenda. That's right. I didn't have it because the meeting was the next day. Thank you. Okay. Good point, Sue. But it is in the council packet. That's pretty good executive summary. And also, I'll give you the website. It's a very, very thick document. You're welcome to have at it.
Just for information, I picked up one of the CDs that they had available. So anyone that wants it, I'll bring it down tomorrow because I'm leaving town tomorrow, but I'll leave it off at your office. And Adobe Reader is what it's all listed in. And it's a biggie. So, okay.
That's all the questions I have. Thank you.
Most of my questions have been answered, except on the extension of the timelines, just an extension of timeline, no particular 1 month, 6 months, 2 years, 6 years?
Now, if we were going to add anything to that, I'd just say to allow that collaborative process to culminate in a resolution.
Okay, so the extension would just flow with the collaborative process.
Okay. Excuse me, Rick. Somebody told me today that this was supposed to be in place by next May.
Yeah, I think June of 06, I believe, is the final adoption deadline, or May or June of 06. That's correct.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I remember. Okay. I did attend that meeting. He said, hey, the trawl fishermen know where the coral is. He said, but we don't want to tell you, because as soon as we do, you're going to put another 25 miles of closed area around that place. He said, now we don't go putting our nets down in coral because it tears them up and it's not good business. He said, but to tell you guys where it is, we have to build trust. And that's what they were a little concerned about, that the trust was always in one direction, that we trust you and you play ball with us and we'll get you the bat. So anyhow, a lot of it came out there that there's an awful lot of things that are being done. There's, for the entire, 200 miles of coast, we have 5 Class A trawlers. I mean, there's just, it's not there anymore. And yet, here are all these places where they're putting closures. And there were 3 or 4 different agencies putting out what they thought should be closed areas. And the one was just closed everything. I mean, it was just
It's all closed. You don't open. And it was, okay, it was strictly for trawl industry. But you could just see the rest of the fishermen looking at it and saying, if they're going to close that, they're going to close everything. Every time they close something, it's closed. Nobody ever talks about reopening. You know, it's just, well, it's such a good thing we closed it. And it's never, nobody's talking about how you're going to reopen it. There was one other thing that came out in that, and I don't see it addressed in the in this draft, but it jumped at me that the Nature Conservancy, Chuck Cook, when he made his presentation, he said that he was open to just about anything except the buyback program. The buyback program, he wanted to continue doing that. And it jumped into my mind that, gee, if we only have five trawl boats out there and they're buying back the permits and buying back the boats, and these guys are now out of business and they're not issuing any new permits, so the whole idea from, as far as I was concerned, that Chuck Cook was trying to kill the trawl industry, even though he was saying at the same time that we're open for discussion. But it didn't sound to me like he was open for discussion. And I don't know, maybe you want to add something about that in your draft, because once they buy out back all those trawl boats, they ain't coming back. Okay, I think that ends the discussion at this point. Would you like to, is someone like to make a motion or any additional comments? Okay, somebody like to make a motion to accept this and send it to the city?
I'll make a motion to send this letter to the city and try to forward it on the city.
Okay.
She went
Mike.
To Mike.
Okay, so we have a motion from Ed. We have a second from Jim. And I'll start with Mandy this time. Are there any discussion?
This is a tough one for me because I missed the April 29th meeting and I really wanted to. I was on a business meeting and I just received this letter today, and you know, an initial, I mean just almost just a little while ago, and on initial review, you know, I personally would like to see some changes made, but I don't feel that I have enough information, and I don't feel that I've had enough time to really review this to where I'm comfortable with it. So I'm going to refrain from making any comments or voting on this at all.
There is a parliamentary procedure. It's called tabling a motion.
Yes.
And if you wanted to make move that it be tabled, and you can get a second, we could put it off. But I think that would be a killer because we're talking about a timeline that this thing really, they're going to be getting into it in June. But if you'd like to make the motion to table it.
I'll just abstain.
Okay.
Point of order. I think you can vote no because you don't have enough information or you know, but abstentions are only allowed, I believe, for cause and the conflict of interest or other such things. So I believe that all
a preferred alternative at the Foster City meeting. So it does appear that we're heading to a, when they adopt that preferred alternative, then they do their final environmental analysis and prepare for adopting regulations based on that.
So if the city doesn't make any comments, then no comments would be probably included for their adoption, right?
Well, I could just say that we wouldn't be included in the packet for the PFMC board members to read at their prior to, you know, when they receive their packet for their June meeting.
Okay. I'm in support of this letter. I think it'll help a sustainable trawler operation on our coastline.
Support the letter.
I also support the letter.
I don't need to ask you, huh? Okay. We do have a motion. We have a second. And I don't have any comments either. And I will now call for the vote. All in favor of sending this letter to the City Council with a recommendation that they send it on, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passed unanimously. I see nothing else on item 4-2, unless you have something else to say, Rick. No? Okay, we have a third action item, discussion of clarifying city limits in regards to Grassy Island and fish and game issues and sand spit and the sand spit as to jurisdictional rights and coastal access. I don't recall us putting fish and game issues on that, but perhaps that got added later because that was not one of the ones, that's not part of the action item that I suggested. Okay, so, but it, however, this this was put on the agenda at the request of Mandy Davis, and I don't know, the question here is whether you need to go first, Rick, or maybe it'd be better if Mandy identified where she wants to go with this, and then we'll put...
This item was really the way I did it, is we put this item on at the request of the board. One of the board members did request it, and there we operate on a consensus, and there appeared to be a consensus that the item should be agendized. So, yeah, I don't really have a presentation on this.
Okay. Mandy, since you had requested it, would you give us an overview of where you want us to go with it?
I guess I can split this up into two sections, and I would prefer to address what I was trying to get at in general is that we have multi-jurisdictional issues with the estuary itself and also with the sand spit. The sand spit being that we split it with state parks, and the estuary is, you know, we have three different jurisdictions. One is fish and game, one is city, and one is state parks. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to address the individual issues about the sand spit. And really all I wanted to, and I got a chance to get information from Rick after I agendized, or asked this to be agendized, and it has to do with, I wanted to find out really how much say we have in the process with state parks, with the Snowy Plover fence, where it's put, and where we have coastal accesses placed. And right now, there are some issues with it, and I think that they can be alleviated by just working with state parks. Is it okay if I go up to the overhead and kind of show these guys?
Sure, go ahead. I don't believe there's a microphone, is there?
Mandy?
Can,
well, for people at home to be able to hear you, you're either going to have to speak from the microphone at the podium or run back and forth, because it's...
If you talk from the podium, I can give you a laser to point
at that. Yeah, I probably can just do this verbally.
Okay.
It's important for people who watch this at home to know what you're saying, because it's...
Okay, well, there is a map up there. Okay, well, I've been paddling around out there pretty extensively and have gone out onto the sand spit. And I wasn't really aware that right now we have a coastal access that's right about in that area. And we also happen to have some plover fencing that goes all along, you know, the eastern side of the sand spit. But unfortunately, and I'm sure this was an oversight by state parks, they ended it right about there. So there's no fencing right there. And I watched just this last weekend, in a one-hour period of time, kayakers, you know, they had a high enough tide so they could come in here in this cove, and they went up the dune, and there wasn't any fencing, and they went over, and they were unfortunately faced with being on the wrong side of the snowy plover fence, and they had no idea. So these are my recommendations. Number one, we have places where there isn't fencing where there should be. We have too few coastal accesses, and we have one very natural coastal access that we should at least take a look and see if there are any nests and ask state parks to allow us to do that. That area is right here. And it's a very natural access, and a lot of people do that. There also happens to be one area where I'm sure this was an oversight, but they actually put the fencing so close to the high tide line that there is no walking corridor for tourists and people that live here. So we have very little access in a couple of areas, and that would be easily remedied. We have no access in a couple areas, I think, that we actually could, and especially coming on tourist season, we need to be able to provide places for these people to go across. So I am suggesting that we contact state parks, that because it is our right as the city, that we, number one, ask them to make these small changes, to take the fencing back in that area around Sandals Cove a little bit farther west, so people have a chance to actually access that eastern side of the sand spit. That we be allowed to, in conjunction with state parks, to finish that snowy plover fencing so people don't find themselves on the wrong side of the fence and possibly damage snowy plover area. And that we be allowed to, if there are no nests, to have another coastal access for folks, especially coming into the season. So those are the specific things I want to talk about within the city limits and, you know, and working with state parks.
Just a minute. Just let her talk. Okay, you're still on.
So I've already talked to Rick, and he said that, you know, changing that area right around Sandals Cove would be a piece of cake, and you know, the Harbor Department could do that. It would take a little bit more of an effort for that area that has been unfenced and is allowing people to go into areas, and we also need to sign it. And then we need to have cooperation of state parks to walk through that, what I'm proposing to be a new coastal access for citizens, to take a look and see if that is a potential coastal access, and then fence it off as one. So those are the issues that we're looking at.
At this point, because we don't really have anything to work on, would it be appropriate if I appointed you as a committee of one and whomever you choose to look into this a little bit further, come in with specific recommendations in a letter or whatever that you felt was necessary?
Sure. I've actually already started the process. There's a young man named Aaron that works for State Parks. He's part of that Snowy Plover coalition, and he said he wanted to take a look at it. And then I know I could get all kinds of people that would donate time to get the fencing put up in the city limits into the appropriate places. So, sure.
Okay.
Andy, well, first of all, thank you for the big print. I hope that wasn't a comment on
my
you
age.
Know the yeah. age of the board here, but it's much nicer. So, when you say coastal access, are you talking about fenced walkways through the dunes from the bayside to the ocean? Is that?
Yeah, absolutely.
I was fairly certain, but I just wanted to make sure I understood what you were talking about, and I think that. In those areas that are protected, when there's a reasonable distance between those walkways, people are much more inclined to comply and use them. If you have, you know, more than a quarter of a mile or half a mile, if you have an extended distance, that's when people go the heck with it and they just walk, jump over the fence. So I think that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Offer of assistance from state parks, at least I did personally. There was a dispute going on, we all know about, over the years, but I was glad to have any help we could get from state parks, and so they've, for the last two or three years, they've assisted us with materials and a snowy plover qualified monitor. I forget, but there's a snowy, you know, they've had training to identify the nests, and they go out there, and last year we physically actually helped place them, and I was aware, just for your background, that we wanted to put one of the, originally I wanted to put the access, the corridor access to the beach, right, I think where Ms. Davis is talking about, because it's a natural swale area that a lot of people who paddle across to go surfing, especially, they walk that area. And, that, I mean, you can see it, the footprints and everything. It was the logical place to put the corridor. Unfortunately, when the snowy plover monitor checked it out, there was nests in that area, and they didn't feel comfortable putting them in that area. So they put the corridor in another location that isn't as convenient, and that was their decision, and we went along with it because they were offering to help us. So that's kind of the history of it. This year, they put up the fence, and I think we can adjust a lot of things, as you were right on with your assessment, except for the corridor thing concerns me. Obviously, I would not. The city, you know, we can go out there and adjust the fences, and I would be comfortable doing that if I was convinced that it was going to improve our protection and our management effort. I guess I would be a little concerned with moving that corner based on what they told me last year, so I would not do that unilaterally.
Mm-hmm. No other comments?
Well, I would encourage the corridor from the cove over to the South Jetty. Otherwise, people are going to just walk there anyways.
I would say the same thing about this that I did about the ground fishing, that I think there's sometimes overreaction and overregulation. But having said that, I also think there ought to be a corridor where people can access the ocean across the sand spit. So I would support that.
I would agree with Jim.
What's that?
I basically agree with Jim.
Okay.
Zip.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mandy. I think that was a good presentation, and I do support the idea of having as much coastal access as we can get, and we do have a responsibility to protect the protected species. So, other than that, you are the committee of one so far.
If I could make a suggestion, let's not even mention the word committee so I don't have to try and remember the Brown Act rules. I think it would be fine, but maybe appoint Ms. Davis to work with us and see if we can improve it with a volunteer effort, and we'll report back to you or something like that.
Yeah, I guess I'm in charge of you, huh?
Yeah, if it's a committee. I can't remember all that, but anyway.
The committee requires...
No committee.
It wasn't a problem, I'll tell you. Anyhow... thank you very much. Any more discussion on item 4.3?
And then there was the second part of it. We were just talking about the city limits going through the grass islands. Very simply, you know, very simply put is that every year I know the city gets calls about the limit where the fishing game, you know, jurisdiction and the city jurisdiction start and end is very confusing at best. And I think that city limit going through that grass island area, I've really eyeballed it a lot and did a lot of, you know, very informal surveying. And every year these guys get phone calls they shouldn't be getting. Every year Fish and Game gets phone calls they shouldn't be getting. And I think part of the problem is people just don't know where that jurisdictional line is. So what I am suggesting is that in conjunction with Fish and Game, that be surveyed. There's actually survey markers on both sides, so it should be really easy to do. And that we have posts. We have signs posted that people know when they're going into Fish and Game, and it could be posted Fish and Game area number 2, ecological reserve, which is what they call it, and actually a phone number where people know how to get a hold of Fish and Game if they need to. On the opposite side, it would say exactly the opposite. Now entering the city of Morro Bay, and here's the number that you can call. That way people are real clear where those jurisdictional lines are, and there's no question.
I guess I'm... Is that a major problem for you, Rick? That do you get phone calls all the time? Very much?
No.
No?
I don't remember ever getting one, but there probably have been some come in the office. But
you know, because you know, I've spent a lot of time on the bay, and I've never seen human beings walking on grassy island because you sink in up to your knees. I think, quite frankly, I've never been on grassy island, and I've never seen anybody on there. But I will, at this point, ask you if you want to make a motion that to something to placing these monuments, if you would like to make that motion.
Well, are there any other people that have any other questions?
Yes. I'm not sure, you know, having been out on the bay, there are no areas that are restricted as far, I mean, if you're out there in a boat that you cross that line, obviously the sheriff's are not going to be coming after you once you get out of the jurisdiction of the harbor patrolman. Because, as we discussed earlier on another issue, there's really no other agency actively out there. You know, fish and game occasionally, but they can cite people inside the city limits too. I guess I'm not clear on what the problem is. Maybe that's to go out and put up floating buoys or stakes on the island. I'm not sure what the issue is. I guess that's my that's why I'm perplexed.
Okay, I'll clarify. I was hoping not to have to do this. The issue is this, is they have been marking that they have marked city limits and fishing game limits historically, and they do it for a variety of reasons during hunting season, et cetera, to notify both sides, you know, where the hunting and where the territory is. At this point in time, those markers are not in the right place. I would like to see them put in the right place and marked very clearly how people can get a hold of somebody if they need to. But right now, and I can show you actually where they are and where they should be on that map, Fish and Game has admitted that, you know, they have not been, you know, as I've talked to Dean Heilman, and he has admitted that from his standpoint they are not placed in the appropriate place and that they should have better marking, that people should know how to get a hold of them. And that's all I'm asking for is better marking and in the right place.
Okay. No, I understand.
Okay. Any comments?
Well, it's funny. I talked with Dean Heilman just yesterday. He was at the post office and he came across to my office. And I mentioned this city line and I asked him if there was any problems there. And he said not that he knew of. He said that that somebody from the commission was out there turning around a while back, but that the Fish and Game had marked that in the past and that he hadn't seen any specific problems with it. And I don't really see a need for it unless there was a lot of complaints over it. And I wouldn't even mind if she did that, as long as it doesn't cost the city a nickel for a survey or cost them any money. I mean, we're not in financially good shape right now to be buying any more painting and surveyors to go out there and do it. Mm-hmm. So I know the Fish and Game has marked this in the past, and it may be off, it may not, I don't know, because I personally haven't been out there. But as far as Heilman said, he didn't have a lot of complaints about that, except for, I guess, he must have had one from Mandy, maybe, but, you know, maybe other people, I don't know, but he told me it didn't seem like it was a problem.
Okay. Jim?
I'm maybe still a little confused, too. Are we talking specifically and exclusively about hunters not knowing where they're hunting, or is it some people that want to know where the hunters are hunting?
Both, real honestly, and it's yeah, you know, just being able to have that mark so people know, you know, on both sides, the hunters know where the city limits are, and those people that are recreational boaters, if they don't want to go into that hunting territory, they know where that is.
Okay.
I've never had any problem determining where to hunt and where to not to hunt. I don't see a big issue, Mandy.
Well, because hunting is such a volatile issue in the community at times, it probably would be good to, you know, that everyone knows where the boundaries are. You know, those are imaginary lines across the water, and you know, there is some place out there in the middle that helps people, you know, helps define the area that they're not allowed to go beyond that point. I'm sure, you know, if you've been here forever, like, you know, some of us, you probably know where that line is, but you can't assume that everybody that's going to be hunting on the bay has been hunting there forever, or that even if they have been hunting forever, that they are aware of what the proper boundary is.
Okay.
Especially for the Harbor Department. And I guess I'm concerned, I'm not sure where it's going and who's paying for it.
Okay. Okay. Would you like to modify your...
Well, historically, Fish and Game has done it, so...
then that's great. If your intent was to ask them to...
Yes.
...continue doing something they've been doing in the past and it wasn't coming out of city funds, if you'll clarify it in the motion, then no
problem. All
right,
so let me clarify the motion is to ask Fish and Game to reassess placement of their signage, to place it in the appropriate places, and to ensure that the signage has names and phone numbers.
Thank you.
I'm getting it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I'll accept those changes as a second.
I assume it is against the law to fish or to hunt in the city, right? And so it's logical to me, too, to have the Department of Fish and Game be responsible for marking their own boundaries.
Any additional comments? All right. Then the motion before us is to request the city to contact the Department of... Actually, the initial motion said that the city and the Department of Fish and Game, and as I understand it now, that has been changed. So it is now that the city will request the Department of Fish and Game to replace or to place again significant signage going across, especially on Grassy Island, identifying where the boundaries of the city and where the boundaries of the Fish and Game are, including names and phone numbers of people to contact. Is that everyone with that? Sue, did you get that?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
I was a little confused if you put names.
The only question I would have, and maybe it's not appropriate because I'm not on the board, but I know sometimes if you put names and then that person is no longer there, that can be a problem. Maybe it's better to just put agency name. Okay, I thought you meant.
Okay. That's an amendment and a second? Okay. Okay. All in favor of the motion before you? Say aye.
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 Opposed?
Nay.
Okay. Nay.
You know, I don't, just to comment on that, I don't see, I appreciate the board's sensitivity to potential costs for the city, because I would have going to jump in there if it, there's more, it's easier said than done to do this, and I don't feel that it should be the city's responsibility to notify folks that, you know, they're now entering the hunting area and here's the regulations and folks to contact. So, and it would, as anybody who works around the water knows, it's, you know, not easy always to get things in the right place and to maintain them and keep them up, and, you know, it could turn into a substantial effort, and it would certainly be a bit of an effort to do this. So it seems to me, though, it's we can relay that request. I don't know that we need to go to council for that. I'll be happy to relay that request, and I urge you, if this is an important issue to you, I don't know why Fish and Game wouldn't be sensitive to individuals relaying this request, too.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't declare whether the motion passed or failed.
Oh, I'm sorry. The motion passed. I'm sorry. Are there any more discussion or observations about item three? Okay, now we go to information items.
I'll go through this kind of quickly. A lot of these issues we already touched upon in our other...
Any discussion on what this lady wants, or whatever she was talking about? About Grassy Island?
The subject is closed.
I was watching on TV. This lady ought to be sent out of this.
Okay.
So I'm going to keep this kind of brief because there are some things that are duplicate.
Okay.
We did actually get some funding for dredging, which is a minor miracle, and that'll be mostly entrance area dredging with the hopper dredge Aquino, which will be arriving, I think, actually, maybe a little later than May 15th now, from what I heard. But they are going to be coming right around mid-May and staying for approximately 2 weeks. And the Corps did contact me today. They're sending up their surveyors on Monday. So they'll be doing the prep work starting next week on that. And I do think it was postponed maybe till a little later in the month, like maybe May 25th. But they will be arriving, and they will be actually doing some work mostly in the entrance area. The Harbor Patrol officers and some of our reserves completed a three...
The public's access to the Lee site. I think, and I know this is of real interest to you, Don, I think I've told the board before about, you might not have been there, but, you know, it would be my assessment of all that's gone on in this most recent meeting, which I was not in, but from what I heard about that, it is not feasible to have a fuel dock there into the future. If that is news to you, I wanted to report that out, that... Now, the infrastructure is still there to some extent, and there are tanks still in the hill. But we would, of course, still entertain if those tenants desire to reestablish, but they made it clear they do not. The regulatory costs have mounted to be extraordinary. And... really, the economics, although it looks like we're going to have a pretty good month. I know I did just talk to the one remaining fuel dock operator. In March, he lost money. In April, he lost money. And, you know, he hopes in May, because we've got a lot of fishing boats here, he'll make money. But the one remaining fuel dock, it's been difficult. So the economics, the regulatory environment, the very nature of that neighborhood down there, it does not seem to me that we are going to be successful, or maybe, in my opinion, even that we should be trying to hold on to that fuel dock facility. So that, I wanted to give you that assessment, and that's it. If you want to beat me up on that, or you want me to go on the next one?
I'll beat you up privately.
Okay. The Blue Ribbon Task Force is this Marine Life Protection Act initiative that they've streamlined they've done an expedited process, and they've been having a lot of meetings, going very fast. They've now asked for nominations to regional working groups because they have selected the area of they're going to focus on for these MPAs, this network of MPAs, which is from Conception to, right up to San Francisco, but I can't remember exactly where now. But anyway, it's close up to San Francisco. The relatively large area, maybe it's right around Pillar Point. Anyway, it's the Central Coast. So that's the area we're targeted in, and they're going to set up these regional working groups, and apparently I maybe ended up nominated for being on for Harbors, and there's a bunch of people, and who knows how it's all going to work out because they haven't announced those appointments, and it's just another thing to keep up with for me, but it's an important issue, and we'll do our best.
Recent council action. In April, council adopted a resolution approving assignment of lease site 5252W from Associated Pacific Constructors, Reg Wibley, to Paul Gillen. That's a big change on the waterfront. Reg has been there for such a long time. He'll still be actively involved for the next year or so anyway, but it is a big change. On the 25th of April, council did adopt the resolution that amended the fee schedule per your recommendation. There were a few minor changes made, and the adopted fee schedules attached for your reference. And they also authorize removal of the fence at that northwest end of Tidelands Park and to put that as an open space area, which again was based on both your recommendations and recommendations from the Recreation and Parks Commission. In future action, on the 9th, the council will be looking at an amendment to extend the lease term for 10 years on lease site 37W, which is the old coastal boatworks area, and a 10-year lease for mooring zone area A14 with Mar Bay Marina. The lease site agreement, the new 45-year lease site agreement with the Andersons on their lease site is postponed until the 23rd, but that will be at their 23rd. And then the fisheries letters, you guys have already taken your action. Mandy?
I have a question about that fence. I mean, it says northwest, but don't you guys mean southeast corner?
Is it southeast?
Yeah,
oops.
But then a compass upside down.
There is a compass going down that area. Yeah,
I should have gotten.
We'll get rid of the one in the northwest area, too. Okay. Does that conclude the information items?
That concludes the information items.
Very well. We'll move on to additional comments.
Well, I have a question on the report that she gave. On the items that we're on the fee schedule, I noticed that there are several miscellaneous fees or fees that the council approved or updated that weren't on our list of fees that we looked at.
These were all on the list.
Those were all on the list?
Yes. They changed a couple of the numbers, but not substantively. All these were on the list. They may have changed the wording slightly, but they were all on, they were the exact same. They're formatted slightly differently because this is their format.
Okay.
Since there are no additional comments, future agenda items. Anyone have any of their favorites? Okay. We'll come up with something. We may have a very short meeting in June. And I will now.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Can we?